I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen, all you mother...
Politics. Politics. Humor. Humor. Tequila. Tequila. And an IQ of under 64. Yeah. You're listening to Art Cop Radio, 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 Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Art Cop Radio. This is show number 109. Art Cop Radio heard on the Art Cop Radio networks, artcop.com, seen on the inner tubes. My name is Bart. I'll be leading the mule team into the canyon today. Let's see what we got for you in the big, big show. Yesterday, Libby got hung out to dry. I love it. Fox News tried to spin it like it was no big thing. We straightened him out. Got a double shot of Bill Maher. Everybody likes Bill Maher because he hates the president like we do. 60 Minutes foretold a horrible economic crash that's coming. What can we do to stop it? You know, we went from peace and prosperity and a budget that was balanced to a monster deficit. The world hates us. We're at war. Bush has just turned everything upside down and run it into hell. But the economic problems aren't going to go away. Good thing you got Bart and his IQ of 64 to solve the problem for you. Also got a thing. For some reason, not sure why, Michael Savage went after Diane Sawyer. And I don't like either one of them. I guess I like Diane Sawyer more than I like Michael Savage. But I figure if the two of them are going to fight, I'll roll one, pour me a shot, put my hands behind my head, lean back, and watch the fun. Also, we got some real estate situations that we need to discuss. What else we got? We got some outrage from Mike Malloy. We got some of this, some of that. Oh, and you're guaranteed to love the ending of today's show. So what's up first? Shot of Chinaco? Got to tell you, starting to get off on the Chinaco. This is my fourth run through of the intro. First one was the best I'd ever done, but the mic wasn't on. Son of a bitch, I hate that. Second and third one just had some flubs in it, so we're on number four. Starting to get off on the Chinaco. That should be a Bart's rule. Every time you screw up, you got to take another shot at Chinaco. Expect a lot of screw-ups. Okay, no time, because it's barely going to fit on one CD. Here's the big, big show!
This is www.bartcop.com.
Louis Libby has been convicted on four of the five charges that were lodged against him by the special prosecutor. Our Jim Angle is outside. Jim, are you getting any more reaction from folks inside the courtroom?
Well, yes, there was the Libbys obviously have reacted. Mrs. Libby is said to be on the verge of tears, and Scooter Libby had a rather sad, resigned smile on his face, but the kind of smile you get from resignation, not from happiness, obviously.
There it is, another scoop from Fox Horn News. Scooter Libby is not happy, repeat, not happy and not smiling after his four felony convictions this afternoon. Back to you, Bob.
As the judge was talking about a few moments ago, there will be plenty of confusion about this. And I must say the defense has laid out all sorts of reasons for an appeal and took pains during the trial to say on several occasions, for the record, Your Honor, we would like to note this, that, or the other, including at one point suggesting that the defendant was not getting a fair trial.
Well, yeah, I guess if you see that your trial's going bad and you're afraid to testify, you're afraid to call the vice president to testify, if things are going that bad, yeah, I guess you might be looking down the road at a certain conviction and what you could do about it.
So there is plenty of grounds for them to move on an appeal here.
Objection. You can't say that. I mean, if you're a Fox whore, you can say anything you want, but this guy with the microphone in his hand, he's not an attorney. He doesn't know what he's talking about, but he's guaranteeing the We Report You Decide viewers that there's plenty of room to appeal on here because of all the mistakes they made. Well, sure, that they found a Republican guilty, it must be a travesty. It must be a miscarriage of justice. Right, Fox News?
And I should say one other thing. We've talked to a lot of defense lawyers and former federal prosecutors about this case. When Scooter Libby went to the FBI and before the grand jury, he was advised by an old friend who is not a criminal lawyer. And in talking to many criminal lawyers and former prosecutors, they have all said, when you go before a grand jury, if you cannot remember, do not try to help them. Do not try to sort through your memory. Just say you do not remember. Scooter Libby, many believe, simply went too far in trying to remember things and did not remember them correctly. Obviously, the prosecution says he knowingly lied, but there are a number of people who said they would never let their clients go into a grand jury and start sorting through their memories and saying anything nearly as specific as he did to both the FBI and the grand jury here.
Well, are they saying that Libby didn't have adequate representation, which is kind of amazing considering the $200 million a day that the BFEE has been stealing? Why wouldn't they get him in there with some good attorneys? One of the jurors came out right after this and talked about it, and he said, well, the reason we didn't believe Libby is because he said he remembered it on Tuesday, he forgot it on Thursday, and then on Saturday he remembered again that he knew it all along. And he said it just doesn't work that way. We didn't buy it. And I guess that's what this fellow was talking about. Don't help them. Just say, I don't remember. Instead, well, I knew this day, but I forgot that day. I knew this other day. If Libby hired stupid lawyers, or if they failed to coach him adequately, or if Libby's just too damn stupid to follow his lawyer's advice, well, yeah, I think that's why he was convicted. That and that he committed the crime.
Let's go to Brett Baer, though. He is outside the White House right now, and you've got to wonder what they're saying inside.
Yeah, Edie, right now they're not saying much. We haven't had a statement from the White House or from the Vice President's office, but we do expect one at the bottom of the hour, 12:30, at the White House briefing.
Now, what makes you think the White House is going to have anything at all to say about anything? They're guilty as hell. They couldn't testify. Their boy couldn't testify. They got caught. They're not going to say anything. What can they possibly say?
But now that the case has come to an end and there is a guilty verdict on four or five counts, we do expect a statement again at the bottom of the hour at the White House press briefing. It has been, I should note, quite a week for the vice president. Started out traveling last week, and the Taliban said they tried to assassinate him in Afghanistan. Yesterday, doctors found a blood clot in his left leg, and today his former chief of staff has been found guilty of four or five counts.
Oh, did the most evil man in the Western Hemisphere have a bad week? Oh, that's so sad. That's so awful to hear about that. I guess the last thing he needs now is a heart attack.
Let's check in with Fred Barnes, one of the Beltway boys and the executive editor of the Weekly Standard. First of all, Fred, your reaction?
Well, when it went on so long, when the deliberations went on 9-10 days, you knew that at best it would be a hung jury, at best for Scooter Libby be a hung jury, and now there's obviously a negotiated a verdict here, certainly not in his favor, losing 4 out of 5. You know, this is damaging to the White House, no question about that, and it's even more damaging to Vice President Cheney. I would stop short of calling it politically devastating, however, because no one was charged with an underlying crime here of actually having illegally leaked the name of Valerie Plame Wilson to the press. We know who the original leaker was, Richard Armitage at the State Department, but he wasn't charged, nor was anyone else.
It would be interesting to know why Fitz chose not to file those charges against Armitage or the others. What the Republicans are trying to say is, well, there wasn't really a crime. He just tried to cover up what wasn't really a crime, which is kind of stupid. Why risk going to prison to cover up something if there's no crime there? I think that's proof that there was a crime, but whatever crimes were committed, he would rather take the rap and go to prison for lying about it and therefore covering up the trail so they couldn't discover the crime or the bigger crimes. We just don't know. Why did Fitz stop digging?
But, Fred, you know the way these things get spun, the White House's political opponents will talk about the Valerie Plame case and Scooter Libby being convicted in the Valerie Plame case.
Of course they will.
And, and in many people's minds, it will be a conviction for outing a CIA agent.
No, I don't think so. I think they'll understand what the case is. I mean, people aren't stupid, the people that are following this case. They'll understand what it is. But it is a conviction in that case. It's just not a conviction for what some had thought would be the underlying crime of having leaked that information to the media. I mean, we know better now from a late disclosure from Richard Armitage, the former number two guy at the State Department, that he had been the original one giving that information to Robert Novak, the columnist.
That clearly seems to be a crime. The CIA wanted that crime punished, so they sent it to the Justice Department. But Fitzgerald decided not to pursue it. Why?
I think people will understand what this is. They'll realize that this is harmful to the Bush White House. Scooter Libby was not a junior aide at the White House by any means, an extremely important aide, particularly involved in foreign policy and national security issues. Obviously the closest aide to Vice President Cheney, but someone who functioned as a member of the full White House staff at a very high level. So this is damaging and embarrassing for the White House, and no doubt the political opponents will be talking about this for many days and weeks to come.
You know, the typical whore press, not just Fox News, this is everybody, they said the Libby conviction was the highest ranking White House conviction in the last 20 years. You think, well, gee, let's go back to early 1987. Who was president then? Oh, that's right. Reagan was in there. And Reagan's staff got charged with a whole shitload of crimes, and Bush had to pardon everybody to cover up his end in it, because Bush was running the country then, not Reagan. That's kind of a dirty thing he did to Reagan. Bush was running the secret CIA bullshit behind Reagan's back, and then when the shit came down, they asked Reagan what was going on. He said, hell if I know. I don't know anything about it, making him look even more stupid than usual. But the whore press, instead of saying this is the biggest conviction since Bush's daddy had to pardon a bunch of Reagan's crooks. No, they wouldn't mention that. They just mentioned the 20-year figure. And if you want to do the math, you can figure out when the last bunch of crooks this bad got caught inside the White House.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has just issued a statement, and I quote here, "I welcome the jury's verdict. It's about time someone in the Bush administration has been held accountable for the campaign to manipulate intelligence and discredit war critics. Louis Libby has been convicted of perjury, but his trial revealed deeper truths about Vice President Cheney's role in this sordid affair. Now President Bush must pledge not to pardon Libby for his criminal conduct."
Typical Democrat, typical Harry Reid, he calls on Bush not to do that. And then when Bush does that, he's going to say, "Why, I never thought he would. If he had any balls or if he had any brains," should I bother to finish that sentence? Harry Reid should have said, "If this president wants to avoid impeachment, he will not pardon these men. If this president wants to avoid impeachment, he will not pardon Louis Libby for his crimes." And then when Bush does pardon him, then you say, well, the president is eager to be impeached. Let's give him what he wants. We told him how to avoid impeachment. He decided he did not want to avoid impeachment. So here we go. But no, he's afraid to. He's afraid to get on the record. He's afraid to show his hand. He always wants to keep everything mysterious. And that gives Bush all the wiggle room in the world. He can do whatever he wants. But if you tell him up front, pardon him and it's impeachment for you, then who can say, how dare the Democrats, after he pardons them and they start with impeachment? Nobody can say that because Bush invited it. But the Democrats can't figure that out because they don't have my big brain with the IQ of 64.
I know why you're happy. Afghanistan reported a record opium crop. I think that explains why Dick Cheney came back from his trip saying, "Hey, they greeted us with flowers." And they blew my mind. Now, you heard about this week? The Taliban tried to blow up Dick Cheney. Don't worry, he's okay. No, he was never in danger. At the time of the attack, he was safely asleep in his coffin. So... I just hope that this attempt on his life doesn't turn him bitter, vicious, and paranoid, because that... Well, speaking of vicious, we are 10 months away from anyone even casting the first vote in the presidential election. Already, the mud is flying. Did you hear the latest about Barack Obama? That he comes from a family of slave owners? And he's black. This is... But he's half white. And apparently on his mother's side, the white side, they own slaves. And the Barack Obama camp was going to deny it, but his approval ratings in the South shot up 27 points. So, but that's nothing. Apparently President Bush's entire family is owned by Saudi Arabia. That... Now, in other slave-owning news this week, I don't know why it was a big week for slave-owning news. I couldn't make this up. I'm not making this up. One of Al Sharpton's ancestors, you heard this? Yes. Was owned by one of Strom Thurmond's ancestors, but they sold him because his medallion kept getting caught in the cotton gin. But is this really relevant to the presidential campaign? Whose ancestors owned whose ancestors? To me, that's more a first date conversation. And you heard about the big John McCain gaffe. Now, he was on the David Letterman show announcing his presidential campaign, and he pulled a Joe Biden. He, right off the gate, he said the wrong word. He used the word wasted to describe the lives lost in Iraq, and he the next day said, no, I should have used the word sacrificed. But to put it in perspective, when McCain was a prisoner in Vietnam, George Bush was wasted. And, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I meant to say he was sacrificing brain cells. And they're going after Al Gore. He's not even in the race yet. They're going after him. He had won the Oscar Sunday. Not even a day goes by when they busted him because apparently, listen to this, his house in Tennessee uses 20 times the electricity of the average house in Tennessee. But that's because Gore's house has electricity. I love the people in Tennessee. But, you know, Gore has done so much for the environment. What do they care if he heats his house by leaving the refrigerator door open? And by the look of him... He does heat his house by leaving the refrigerator. That is an inconvenient girth this man has. Our long national nightmare is finally over, I'm probably sure you heard. Anna Nicole Smith's body was sent to the Bahamas, and it sounded like such a good idea. James Brown's body is going skiing.
When the stock market plunges like it did this past week, everyone pays attention. But short-term losses aren't that important to the man you're about to meet. David Walker thinks the biggest economic peril facing the nation is being ignored. Who is David Walker and why should we care? He's the nation's top accountant, the Comptroller General of the United States. He's totaled up the government's income, liabilities, and future obligations, and concluded that our current standard of living is unsustainable unless some drastic action is taken, and he's not alone.
I would argue that the most serious threat to the United States is not someone hiding in a cave in Afghanistan or Pakistan, but our own fiscal irresponsibility.
What's going on right now is that we're spending more money than we make. We're charging it to a credit card and expecting our grandchildren to pay for it. And that's absolutely outrageous.
Beginning next year and for 20 years thereafter, 78 million Americans will become pensioners and medical dependents of the U.S. taxpayer.
The first baby boomer will reach 62 and be eligible for early retirement or Social Security January 1, 2008. They'll be eligible for Medicare just 3 years later. And when those boomers start retiring en masse, then that will be a tsunami of spending that could swamp our ship of state if we don't get serious. The Medicare problem is five times greater than the Social Security problem.
The problem with Medicare, Walker says, is people keep living longer and medical costs keep rising at twice the rate of inflation. But instead of dealing with the problem, he says the president and the Congress made things much worse just 3 years ago when they expanded the Medicare program to include prescription drug coverage.
The prescription drug bill was probably the most fiscally irresponsible piece of legislation since the 1960s. The
Why?
Imbalance, well, because we've promised way more that we can afford to keep. $8 trillion added to what was already a $15 to $20 trillion underfunding. We're not being realistic. We can't afford the promises we've already made, much less to be able to piling on top of them.
With one stroke of the pen, Walker says the federal government increased existing Medicare obligations nearly 40% over the next 75 years.
We'd have to have $8 trillion today invested at Treasury rates to deliver on that promise.
And how much do we have?
Zip.
So where's that money going to come from?
Well, it's going to come from additional taxes, or it's going to come from restructuring these promises, or it's going to come from cutting other spending. We spend 50% more of our economy on health care than any nation on earth.
And we have a huge percentage of the population that's not covered.
We have the largest uninsured population of any major industrialized nation.
Well, this is one of those subjects that I don't know a lot about. But I have an idea. I'll bet you the problem is, since we don't have universal coverage, there's a profit motive involved in medicine. And I guess that can be good if you're trying to come up with some new fancy machines that are going to cure the coming diseases of tomorrow. But if there's profit in it, then there's going to be greed and there's going to be gouging and all that other stuff. The truth is, if you go to an emergency room, you're going to be treated whether you have insurance or not. So why not give everybody insurance? See, that's the excuse the hospitals and the doctors and everybody else uses, is there's so many uninsured people, we have to charge you $80 for an aspirin because there's so many people who don't have insurance. Well, you remember back in the 90s, someone tried to give us universal coverage, and the Republicans screamed, oh, that's Stalinism. And the Democrats, as always, backed down and cried, wet their pants, said, please don't hurt me. So the problem's only gotten worse since then. And the reason all the other normal countries, your England, your France, your Germany, your Italy, your Spain, your Japan, all those countries, they've got it a lot better than we do medically because they've got everybody covered and there's no profit in there. Remember when Bush pushed through this prescription bill a couple years ago? They made sure it was illegal to haggle for a better price. You know, why can a company sell a pill for $2 and Canada and make money, but they have to sell it for 15 here? And since I don't live near a border, I'm not real up on this. I don't know if they made it illegal to go to Canada and buy drugs, or if you can just go over and buy a month's worth at a time, or if they just discouraged it. The lying sons of bitches talk about if you buy a pill from Canada, it's not going to be as good as the pill from here. Well, duh. The pills people buy in Canada aren't made in Canada. They're made by Eli Lilly and Pfizer and all those other crooks that are in the United States, and they just screw the Americans because they can, because the government is allowing that. And they're so greedy, you'd think they'd be smart and just sell the pills in North America to Americans, so you wouldn't be able to drive 20 miles and get 80% off on your prescriptions. Maybe in Europe or Africa, you know, you could sell them cheap over there, but why sell it so cheap over here? It just proves how cheap the damn things are. They make a pill for 10 cents, they sell it for $2 in Canada, and they sell it for $15 here. And nobody stands up and says, why? Why are you doing that? And if someone does, I'm sure the reply from the drug company is going to be, well, we need some big profits to make money down the road. Well, no, that's not why your CEO made $80 million last year, because you need profits for down the road. The capitalism is what's screwing us on this. Capitalism is ordinarily a real good idea, but it needs to have brakes and buffers and governors on it, because runaway capitalism is $50 for a bag of ice after a hurricane, or $200 per battery after a flood. That's runaway capitalism. Bad. They've made a deal. The crooks have made a deal with the government to screw everybody. And this greed has caused the big problem that this guy's trying to talk about. So if we could just take the fear of the Stalinism out of this, we could solve the problem. We just need to get everybody insured. And I'll tell you how we can solve the problem right after this.
Any politician who tells you that we can solve our problem without reforming Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid is not telling you the truth.
The longer that we wait, the more we risk a financial crisis.
If you tell them the truth, if you give them the facts, they will get it and empower their elected officials to make tough choices. This is not just about numbers. We are mortgaging the future of our children and grandchildren at record rates, and that is not only an issue of fiscal irresponsibility, it's an issue of immorality.
Okay, so how do we solve it? Got a few suggestions. Don't know if this would solve everything, but it damn sure get us closer to home. First thing you do is you delay everybody's retirement age, which is not as bad as it sounds. Say you're 64, you're going to retire next year. Fine, you get to retire next year because you're that close and you've been looking forward to it, and you might already have things in motion. You know, you're whatever, you put a down payment on a house or you did this and that. You're already in motion. If you're 63, then we add a month to your retirement. So instead of retiring in 12 months, you're going to retire in 13. That is a hurdle you can get over. You can make it. If you retire in 5 years, we add 5 months to your retirement. If you retire in 20 years, we add, you know, you could probably move it up there. If you retire in 20 years, we can probably move you back 3 years, because if you're 45, you're not thinking a whole lot about retirement. You might have half an eye on it, but it's not like it's imminent. You haven't set up all your deals. You haven't timed all your financials to come true at a certain time when you're 45. And besides, in 20 years, think how much longer people are going to be living anyway. I think I saw a thing recently. They're trying to raise the retirement age for pilots. If you're 65 now, you're probably in better shape than your grandpa was when he was 65. And similarly, in 20 years, I think they're going to be in better shape then. So it's okay to move the retirement age back just a little bit. Considering we don't have a choice, that's a big consideration. Another thing you do, I think they call it means testing. If you're rich, you don't get a damn penny. For Ross Perot and Bill Gates and these other people, Warren Buffett, for him to be getting Social Security and Medicare, that's just crazy. I don't know how to set the numbers up, but if you've got many millions in the bank, I don't know where you put the cutoff threshold, but if you're Ross Perot, you just don't get a check. And is it fair? I don't care. The whole country going broke is not fair, so that's what we're trying to avoid. Don't tell me how it's not fair that the rich had to pay into it and don't get anything back. Oh, we're sorry you're rich. Yeah, let's trade places. Then I'll be the guy who isn't fair with all your money. Let's try it that way. The other thing we do is we make sure that everybody's insured. I guess that would be everybody with a job. If you're disabled, well, yeah, then we're not expecting you to do a bunch of work. I don't know a lot about Hillary's health care plan, but I think it was set up to where it all was funneled through your place of business. Fine, let's just make that mandatory. If you have to, you give the business a big tax deduction to set this up, because anything is better than the situation we have. Part of the good news about everybody being covered is that maybe we build a thing in there that you have to get looked at by a doctor once a year. Instead of you waiting until you've well advanced into this problem, whatever it is. What's the old phrase about an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure? That's truer in medicine than it is anywhere else. Instead of waiting until you have to go to the emergency room and get a $200,000 bill for something. If you have regular checkups every year, they'll catch something sooner. It'll be a lot cheaper in the long run, and you'll be healthier. Same way with kids. If you get all the kids covered up front, that prevents a whole lot of problems from developing later in life. So, yeah, if we just get everybody insured and have some kind of mandatory once-a-year checkup, that would solve a whole lot of problems. And two more things are kind of the same thing. One would be, you don't let a guy like George Bush get anywhere near the presidency again. And part of that is coupled with, if the Democrats would just learn to fight back, you know, we have one voice in this country. The Republicans and the media get together and they create a situation, and the Democrats are stuck with reacting to it. And they react to shit very, very poorly. Going all the way back to 94 and 95 when we tried to get the universal health care then, the Democrats just got steamrolled. The talk radio guys were screaming their heads off, and the Democrats were saying, "We're sorry. You're right. Bill Clinton is a crazy man. We need some more Republicans in Washington to keep an eye on him because he's just crazy, that Bill Clinton. He's just insane. So, yeah, we probably could use a few more Republicans in Washington." And don't tell me it didn't happen that way, because I remember 94 damn clear. Democrats ran away from the Clinton and their health care plan. At the very least, they could have said, "Well, fine, like the Republicans are doing us on Iraq right now. Fine, what's your answer to the healthcare problem?" And when they say, "Well, there is no problem," well, fine. Then the Democrats will all be covered when they retired, and the Republicans won't, because you said there's not a problem. The Democrats could just learn how to play a little hardball. It would solve so many problems. What's more likely to happen? The Democrats growing a sack, or all these trillions just falling out of the sky to solve all our problems, which isn't going to happen? So really all we have left is the Democrats growing a sack. Think it'll happen?
Diane Sawyer, a trip to Iran where she kissed the feet of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Oh, my God, she's disgusting. See, in my world, Diane Sawyer would have had her passport seized upon coming back to America, and the smirk would have been driven off her face as she was booked. The handcuffs on the back of her hands for aiding and abetting the enemy, the Hitler of our time. She would have been fingerprinted and booked for sedition. Then we would have seen if she was still smirking, giving a little speech. Okay? Here's Diane Sawyer goes to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and does not once say to him, "How could you deny the Holocaust? Here are the pictures of the 6 or 7 million Jews that Hitler killed. How dare you do this to the world?" So Diane Sawyer, in essence, is agreeing that the Holocaust didn't occur. This is what ABC has become. Listen to clip 13.
"I understand that it's confusing sometimes what we do and why we're there, but even..."
Oh, shut up!
"Even your adversary..."
Oh, shut up! Get that hag off my show. We're not confused by what you do, you witch. You witch, you. You think that you're better than all of us. That's what it is, Diane. You think we're confused by what we do and why we're there? We're not confused by the fact that you're a low-life witch who would do anything for ratings, including going over to the Hitler of our time. You rotten, stinking witch, I pray to God that one day you come to understand how low you have become, Diane Sawyer. What a low-life vermin you really are. Play that again. I want to hear the whole thing.
"I understand that it's confusing sometimes what we do and why we're there, but even your adversaries have their own point of view, and how can you tackle this part of the world if you don't understand why
you
they say they're doing
whore.
What they're doing? Even
you
your
lying whore.
Can teach you something about why they are doing what
you
they're doing.
Lying
and
whore,
we're trying
you.
To bring back real information in this critical time for these people who live in that part of the world. It is so complicated."
You're full of crap. Who do you think you're fooling? You're a liar, and the reason you gave this interview about that interview is because you realize what you have done. You're being told that the people hate your guts. I don't know how this goes on in this country, that a witch, a whore like Diane Sawyer, and I'm going to stick to those words, to me, she's a whore. She's a whore for selling out her intellect like this, whoring herself for ratings. She goes and visits the Hitler of our time, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, does not challenge him on one of his statements, not one, and she does it just for ratings. And she has the nerve to come back here and pretend that it's confusing on what we do and why we're there. Who do you think you're talking to? Even your adversaries have their own point of view. So let's see if I can follow this. It's 1940 and you go visit Adolf Hitler. and people are already being assassinated and executed and worked to death in Nazi Germany, and you say that even your adversaries have their own point of view? And how can you tackle Germany if you don't understand why they say what they're doing and why they're doing it? Diane, all I could say to you is you're probably the lowest creature in American journalistic history. You're probably the lowest creature in the history of American journalism. Did you hear me, Diane Sawyer? I hope to God this gets to you, because this is one man's opinion. But let me tell you, it's not only one man's opinion. It's tens of millions of Americans know that you are the lowest whore in the United States of America. I stand by those words, and if you don't like it, sue me. Take me to a court of law for calling you a whore, because you are an intellectual prostitute for what you have done for ratings. You're lower than Anna Nicole Smith on her worst day. You're dumber than Paris Hilton. You're more shallow than Lindsay Lohan. I don't suppose Diane might have a Jewish friend or two in New York that would stand up to her. Anyone in New York City in the media who knows Diane Sawyer, who may be of the Jewish faith, who might have an opportunity to say to her, you'll become lower than the lowest whore outside the Holland Tunnel in fishnet stockings at 3 in the morning. That you stink, lady. And if ABC had a scintilla of decency, they'd fire her for what she just did.
Sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I got proof. Oh Lord, yeah.
People write in and they say, Bart, when are you going to talk some more about real estate? Well, today's your lucky day, because we got a small real estate story for you. Mrs. Bart likes to watch the Home and Garden channel, I guess HGTV. They got a lot of really goofy shit on there. You know, they'll do the top 10 weird homes in the United States. Well, here's one that looks like a shoe, and here's one that looks like a bathtub. There are some weird-ass people in this world. But they have some kind of show on about real estate, and they tell you what you can get in different parts of the country. And I am effing amazed at some of you people. Statistically, some of you people are listening to this, and I don't understand. They showed a little bitty house in San Ramon, California, which is near Oakland. And it's not on the bay. No, it's not on the ocean. No, it's, trust me, you can't see the ocean from this place. And I'm sure about my facts, saw it myself. I can't vouch for their facts, but I remember what I saw. This fella was trying to buy a house. This was a bad little house. I'm sorry. If it's worse than my house, I figure it's got to be bad. But this guy bought a house. Matter of fact, he had to beg the people. I think he said there was 12 people trying to buy this house. Oh my God, what's wrong with some of you people? 12 people were trying to buy this house. And so they kept raising the price. They kept saying, well, we'd like to sell the house for X. And they said, well, how about X plus 10,000? No. How about X plus 20,000? No. How about X plus 30,000? And they included a bunch of letters. They wrote them a letter every week. They sent pictures of the kid. You know, oh, Timmy would love the house. And whatever, Dottie would too. Our kids, oh, they would love the house. We sure do like your house. They kept going until they finally accepted their offer. Mrs. Bart thinks it was a picture of the kids. I think it was the $75,000 they gave them over the asking price. Now, I don't know how real estate works in your part of the woods, but in Tulsa, Oklahoma, if you give some idiot $75,000 more than he's asking for the house, you know, the bank's going to want about 20% down of the value of the house. They don't care what kind of idiot you are, going to pay $75,000 more. This is a teeny tiny house, 1,250 square feet. I guess the houses that were ruined by Katrina in New Orleans, now I've seen some of those that were smaller than 1,250 square feet. That's 30 by 40. That's like a trailer. Anyway, they sold this house, or they bought this house, for $750,000. for a 1,200-square-foot home. What's wrong with some of you people? That's crazy. In contrast, 2 years ago, we sold Barcott Manor, 1,550 square feet. So that's what, 20% bigger at least? For $80,000. So we sold a bigger house for almost one-tenth of what these people paid for this house in San Ramon. So my question is, how good must life be in San Ramon that you're going to pay $750,000 for a teeny tiny house? I don't get it. You take that $750,000, you slice it right in half. Go to $375,000, you come to Tulsa, Oklahoma, you will get a castle. Turrets, moat, the whole riff. You might even get a guy with a hunchback carrying a torch for that kind of money. If it was on the beach in Malibu, maybe, yeah. $750,000 for, you know, a house that let the gardener stay in there or something. That might make some sense. 1,250 square feet. What's wrong with some of these people? Can life in California be that lovely? I just don't think so. And again, if you've got a house on a hill overlooking the bay and the bridge, yeah, sure, now we're talking crazy money. $750,000 for 1,200 square foot? I don't get it. I guess the only way it might make sense is if you're the crazy bastard selling the house. Now, yeah, it's nice to have $750,000, but what are you going to do? You're going to put that $750,000 down on a $2 million house that's got 2,000 square feet? The only point I'm getting at, the weather in Oklahoma is not as nice as the weather in California. It gets cold here sometimes, and when it gets hot, it gets hot. But geez, the house payments on Barcott Manor were $500. We bought it in 1979, but I think you pay roughly 1%. We bought it for $50,000 and paid $500 a month. So these people in San Ramon are paying $7,000 a month? Part of what doesn't make any sense is whatever, a new Impala costs maybe $16,000 in Oklahoma, but I assume it also costs about $16,000 in California. And it's just weird that, and I know gas is higher in California, and the idea that, you know, you got all these expenses laid out on a table. The house they bought in San Ramon, had they bought that house in Tulsa, they'd be paying about $400 a month for it. But no, instead of $400, they're paying $7,000 a month. So that extra $6,600 a month, that's what they're paying for the privilege to live in California or near Oakland. Even with legal pot, I wouldn't pay an extra $6,000 a month to live somewhere. Where, yeah, let's look at it that way. Would I pay an extra $6,000 a month? Well, I'm not even going to finish that sentence because I don't have $6,000 a month. Why would somebody want to spend $7,000 on a month for a teeny tiny little wooden house when you could spend $500 a month and live in a nice brick, three-bedroom, 1,500 square feet, fireplace? The difference between $500 and $7,000 a month is huge. And besides the loveliness of living in California, if you don't have a lot of money in California, why wouldn't you just move to Tulsa or anywhere, Little Rock or Des Moines? Why in the world do you want to spend $7,000 a month just for the privilege of living there? I don't get it. Somebody write to me and explain it to me.
So Senator Levin, Media Whore number one, Tim Russer, asks, could your committee have done more oversight with the Walter Reed issue?
Sure. I think there was a lack of oversight here for the last many, many years for a number of reasons. And by the way, I think in part it was because it was a Republican Congress and a Republican president. That they didn't want to embarrass the president in a whole host of areas.
Did you hear that? the Republican Congress didn't do anything, even though it was common knowledge, because they didn't want to embarrass this rat bastard George Bush. Huh? How about that? How about that? How many Americans with a family member who, let's just make up an example, was blown to pieces by an IED in Iraq but survived, survived the trauma medicine in Ramstein Air Base or wherever they take them in Germany, sent them to Walter Reed, where the wounds developed gangrene and a limb or two that was left on had to come off. But we don't want to embarrass the president, you see. The Republicans didn't want to embarrass the president. Hence, the Senate Armed Services Committee, when Senator Levin was a minority member, would not call hearings, would not expose the filth and corruption of one more issue that this corrupt Bush crime family has added its poison to. It's amazing the depth of the corruption of this filthy regime. And you know what else? Robert Bezell, who is the chief science and health correspondent for NBC News, reported a couple of days ago, in Iraq, a head wound doesn't always mean you're going to go home. Military personnel with brain injuries are pressured to return to duty. Bezell wrote, when I arrived in Iraq recently, I had a question for the leaders of the medical staff. Last year, when I was reporting on the treatment of brain injuries among troops returning from the war, I learned many experts were concerned about low-level brain injuries among the troops. The rehabilitation experts at Veterans Affairs had been shocked to hear that soldiers and Marines who had been exposed to the concussive force of numerous blasts from roadside bombs, but not obviously injured, were routinely returned to duty. The VA experts worried that this could lead to an epidemic of mental health issues among veterans in the years to come. I asked at the Pentagon if anyone was concerned about this issue, and I got no answer. In Iraq, Bezell goes on to say, I found that what the VA experts were hearing is certainly true. Improvised explosive devices, IEDs, remain the signature weapon of this war. These bombs have gotten increasingly powerful. In the military hospitals in Iraq, most of the U.S. wounded had been injured by IEDs. Most surprising to me, it was not the first IED for most of them. In fact, I met several who had survived as many as 5 IED blasts. One young soldier had been through 5 in the past 6 weeks alone. The explosions often fracture limbs severely. Even with the best body armor, the concussive force can smash internal organs. Troops with obvious injuries receive immediate treatment and a fast trip home for rehabilitation. But what if the soldier just passes out for a few minutes or an hour as a result of one of these attacks? That often happens when the brain is shaken against the skull and stops working temporarily. Right now, the procedure calls for that soldier to be checked out for a day at most and returned to duty. You Republicans are scum with your tacky-ass little yellow ribbons on the backs of your SUVs talking about support the troops, and you send people to Washington who do this, who support this filthy president and this filthy Department of Defense and this filthy vice president and this filthy, gutless Congress that keeps sending these people back and back, the military that sends them back for tour after tour, the families in this country, the one-tenth of 1% of families that are carrying the burden of this filthy, disgusting war, and they're watching their people go over and have arms and legs blown off, have their lives ended, shattered, torn to pieces. And this son of a bitch in the White House just keeps doing it and doing it and doing it.
How can people be so ugly? How can people be so cruel? Yeah, to be hard, easy to become.
My first guest hosts Real Time with Bill Maher, which just began its fifth season. This is another good show. You know, I know a lot of people do not agree with Bill Maher.
Right.
But you watch this show, you always learn something.
Hell, he's in the middle of the introduction. I'm already pissed off at Leno. He's had every right-wing animal in the world on his show. Dennis Miller and Bill O'Reilly and all these just complete total loons. And he doesn't go into a big thing about, well, now you might not agree with everything they say. No, he just says, oh, they're very popular. And they come out and the crowd claps like they're human beings. But then Bill Maher, who comes on, now he, depending on which polls you believe, he represents maybe 2/3 or 3/4 of the country when it comes to being against Bush and the war. When he comes out, it's, oh, you might not like this guy. He might upset you. You're going to scream at your TV. And, oh, my gosh, free speech. Piece of shit. Why can't Leno just introduce somebody? He's got to make an exception because Bill Maher doesn't like the president. He has to warn everybody, brace yourself, it's Bill Maher, like he's going to come out and do something stupid.
Right. You know, I know people yell at the TV, but he really gets you going. It's a great show, Friday nights on HBO. Please welcome Bill Maher.
What do you mean people don't agree with me, Jay?
Well, that's
everybody
right.
Agrees with me.
Well, that's
all
right. Well, no, but I meant that as a comment. I know people yell at the TV, but you always learn something watching
your
show.
Thank you very much.
And this is why I'm anxious to have you here. I know you're off for a while. You're back now. There's big changes. The Democrats are in power.
Yes. How about that? I'm not a Democrat either, but it is... It's nice to have a change,
yeah.
And you are probably worried because it's probably harder to make fun of them.
Actually, it's not.
Oh, come on. You don't think making fun of George Bush is shooting fish in a barrel?
It is, but...
Or as Dick Cheney calls it, hunting?
Yeah, well that's true.
I mean, the political comedy is effective in inverse proportion to the competence of the leader.
Well, that's true. That's true.
In other words, the bigger the fool, the easier for us.
Well, that's...
And this man, come on, let's get real. I mean, Joe Scarborough did a whole week of panel discussions on whether he was an idiot. Seriously, and when you've lost Scarborough country... and I think the science is in on this question.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think he is. The people who were defending him were saying, well, he's just inarticulate. But inarticulate doesn't explain foreign policy. I mean, it's not that complicated. The man is a rube. He is a dolt. He is a yokel on the world stage. He is a Gilligan who cannot find his ass with two hands. He is a vain half-wit who interrupts one incoherent sentence with another incoherent sentence. And I hope I'm not piling on.
No, no, no.
I'm just saying that.
And yet you voted for him. That's what I find fascinating.
Only the second time.
Because the alternative.
But.
Go ahead.
Well, see, and this is the problem with the Democrats, yeah. Is that the alternative actually would have been a better president both times. Al Gore would have been a better president. John Kerry would have been a better president. Not because they're Democrats, because they read. They're readers. Ooh, what a concept. But, you know, I take your point. The Democrats, yes, they're easy to make fun of because they also have to have their feet held to the fire.
Yeah.
The Republicans are bad because they have to be held back. You know, they are the party, and I give them this credit, they are the party of ideas. Big, stupid ideas. The Democrats have lately been the party that either doesn't have ideas or will not defend
their
ideas.
Well, that's the big problem, isn't it? I mean, you have this non-binding resolution.
Right, which is a legislative version of, oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
And it's only a resolution against the surge.
Right.
It's not against, really, the whole war itself,
right,
which
right.
they could do.
Right.
But it's just against the surge, which is itself, first of all, it's a fancy word for escalation.
Right.
You know, surge. Okay. Great word. But it means more of something that's not working now. You know, this is not knocking our guys who are putting a hurt on their guys, but still, they're in an impossible situation. Here's George Bush, the decider, deciding all on his own that this is a good idea. This was not a recommendation from our commanders on the ground. This was not a recommendation from the Iraq study mm-hmm. group, as you know. It's not supported by the American people. It's not supported by the Iraqi people. It's just President Charles in charge, spitballing. thinking outside the bun and saying to himself, everybody else is wrong. I alone know what the right answer for every. I got everybody else's recommendations, and then I talk to the big guy. So I know what's... Even the Pope said he was wrong. Remember last year when the Pope said that thing about the Muslims?
Right.
And then he went, oh, my bad. You know what? I don't know what I was thinking that day. I must have had my miter on wrong. But this recovering alcoholic from Midland, Texas, he cannot be wrong at any point. But I hope I'm not piling on.
Did the Pope actually say, my bad? I'm just curious. Did the Pope go, my bad? I don't remember seeing
it. Yes, it was in Italian, Jay. You missed it.
Well, let me ask you something. Now, Barack Obama's in town. There's a huge fundraiser going on tonight, big holiday. Are you going to that?
No, I'm not for his candidacy. For the simple reason is, if he would be elected president, he would be the first president younger than me. And that can't happen. I cannot happen. I mean, it's bad enough when the ball players are younger than me and the models, but now it's the president. No. But he could be president, and I think he's a brilliant guy.
Excellent speech writer. He writes good. He's a good writer.
He's a really smart guy. Again, a reader.
Yeah.
He's got three things that are against him, I think, that would be very hard to overcome. One, Hillary Clinton has a big lead.
Right.
Two, I think, the lack of experience.
Right.
And three, it's very hard to run a national campaign when your name is on the no-fly list.
Well, there you had it. Bart Cop Radio, show number 109, in the can. Hope you liked parts of it. And if you did, maybe drop me an email and tell me about it. Because we don't get much feedback here at the old Bart Cop Radio. So if I hear from you, might affect future shows. I'd like to thank the subscribers and those who dropped the occasional check in the mail. It's tax time, and I appreciate those out-of-the-blue checks in the mail so much more than you could ever realize. Now I'm going to leave you with a little story and a song. In 1975, Jesus, 32 years ago, a friend of mine went to Dallas to see a band, and he brought with him a little piece of shit recorder, probably spent $50 for it, and he recorded this concert. So after listening to this crappy, crappy tape, it was a great, great concert, but the recording was just so bad. And after 32 years, listening to that really, really bad recording, out of the blue, here comes a soundboard recording of that night. And I don't know about you, but I think when Jimmy Page puts on a guitar and lets his mind wander, it's one of the most beautiful and exciting things in the world. Maybe you agree, maybe you don't. But you're about to get a little taste of that. And I got to warn you, you'll never, ever get these minutes back. So if you got no interest at all, might as well just hit the stop button because that's all there is to this CD. I get to work on show number 110. This is Bart, and I'm out of here.